Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in 2 Samuel chapter 13, the last half of the chapter, verses 23 through 39. We're going to see Absalom, David's third son, murder Amnon, David's oldest son. Our context is this. In the first part of the chapter, verses 1 through 22, Amnon had raped his half-sister Tamar, and Tamar was Absalom's sister. Absalom was not happy about it. So we start now in 2 Samuel 13, verse 23. Now, it came about after two full years that Absalom had sheep shearers in Baal Hazor, which is near Ephraim, and Absalom invited all the king's sons. Two full years when? Two full years after Absalom's half-brother Amnon had raped Absalom's daughter Tamar. The way the relationships worked was like this. Absalom had a sister named Tamar. Absalom and Tamar's mother was Maaka, who had married David. Now, David had also married another woman, Ahinoam, and Ahinoam had had Amnon. That was David's first son. So that makes Amnon and Tamar half-brother and half-sister, and Amnon raped his half-sister Tamar, and Tamar was Absalom's full sister, and he's mad about it, but he stays quiet for two full years. He doesn't say anything. He doesn't go after revenge, which he very well could have done, according to the law of kinsman avenger, but he didn't. He plotted his revenge for 2 years. That's a long time holding it in. So finally, we see his revenge come to full fruition. In verse 23, Absalom has a sheep shearing festival in Baal Hazor, which is near Ephraim. All right, so let's look at the map here. If you will start at Jerusalem, everybody knows where Jerusalem is. You go 3 miles up the road. There's a road that runs from Jerusalem up the hills of Ephraim, all the way up to the north to Shechem, present-day Nablus, between Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim. So that's the main drag, the main road. It's U.S. Highway number 1, except it's Israeli Highway number 1. You start at Jerusalem. You go 3 miles on the north on that road, you get to Gibeah. That was where Saul had his hometown and where he had the capital of the kingdom. You go a couple more miles up the road, you get to Ramah. That's where Samuel lived and died. You go a couple more miles up the road, you get to Mizpah. That's where Samuel rallied the Israelites against they had a big battle against the Philistines and beat the Philistines at the Battle of Mizpah. You go, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 more miles up the road, maybe 4 miles up the road, you get to Bethel, where 300 or 400 years before, Jacob the patriarch had his vision of Jacob's ladder. Now, you go about maybe 6 miles up the road from Bethel and then take a sharp right, go east. You end up at a place called Baal Hazor, and that's where Absalom had his sheep shearing festival. Baal Hazor is said to be near Ephraim. According to Kitto's Popular Cyclopedia of Biblical Literature, Ephraim was, quote, not in the tribe of that name, but near the city called Ephraim, which was in the tribe of Judah, and is mentioned in 2 Chronicles 13:19 and John 11:54. This Ephraim is placed by Eusebius 8 miles from Jerusalem on the road to Jericho, and is supposed by Reland to have been between Bethel and Jericho. Well, if you look at the map, BabelAtlas.org map, that's about where this city of Ephraim would be. It's not marked on the map, but from Baal Hazor to Jericho is about 10 miles due southeast, and Ephraim would be somewhere in between there. So that's not the tribe of Ephraim, that's the city of Ephraim. All right, so much for geography. We have Absalom inviting all the king's sons to this festival. Sheep shearing, of course, was accompanied by a festival. That was common. That was the custom. And so when you had a sheep shearing festival, you would typically invite your sons as well as your neighbors. We go now to 2 Samuel 13, verses 24 and 25. Absalom came to the king and said, behold now, your servant has sheep shearers. Please let the king and his servants go with your servant. And of course, your servant is referring to himself, Absalom. In other words, let the king and his servants go with Absalom, myself, Absalom. But the king said to Absalom, no, my son, we should not all go, for we will be burdensome to you. Although he urged him, he would not go, but blessed him. Now, I'm going to assume here that Absalom right now is contemplating the murder of Amnon, and he's using this invitation as a ruse to get Amnon up there so that Absalom could do the foul deed. It could be he came up with the idea later, but I don't think so. Now, when he says, please let the king and his servants go, what servants is he talking about? David's sons or David's servants? It could be both. John Gill says it's referring to David's sons alone. Well, I don't know. But at any rate, it would be logical to ask the king and his sons to go. David refused, said it would be burdensome, and I'm sure they were, would be burdensome, because the cost of having to support all that royal entourage at a feast sheep shearing festival would be quite much. We go now to 2 Samuel 13, verses 26 and 27. Then Absalom said, "If not, if you don't want all your servants to go, please let my brother Amnon go with us." And the king said to him, the "us" there is Absalom and his entourage, "If not, please let my brother Amnon go with us." And the king, that's David, said to Absalom, why should Amnon go with you? But when Absalom urged him, he, David, let Amnon and all the king's sons go with him. So they're all up there at Baal Hazor. Now when Absalom said, "Please, David, let my brother Amnon go with us," one would think David's suspicion would have been increased at this request. Now there's two possibilities here. Either David was suspicious of Absalom being so nice to Amnon. After all, Amnon had killed his sister. Well, if he did have suspicion of Absalom, the fact that he said, "Okay, all the sons can go," he would have said that in order to protect Amnon, because all the other sons would be up there. Well, as it turns out, the other sons didn't protect Amnon at all, but he could have thought they might have if he was suspicious of Absalom at this point. But there are some reasons why David might not have been suspicious. Amnon is the firstborn and heir to the throne, so it would only be natural for Absalom to ask Amnon to go up there. It wouldn't look suspicious. And besides, 2 years had gone by and Absalom had done nothing in the way of revenge, so David must have figured, well, Absalom, he's gotten over it. And I suspect that's the case here. David was not suspicious. He let his sons walk right into the trap. Now, you could fault David and say he should have been more suspicious than he was, but hindsight is always 20/20. I'll let David go with this one. He had reason to think that Absalom had gotten over his revenge. Now, Absalom had done very well to hold his revenge for 2 years, to put everybody off guard. And so David agrees to let all his sons go to promote brotherly harmony and union. He sure didn't get that. We go now to 2 Samuel 13, verses 28 and 29. Absalom commanded his servants, saying, "See now, when Amnon's heart is merry with wine, and when I say to you, strike Amnon, then put him to death. Do not fear. Have I not I myself commanded you? Be courageous and be valiant." The servants of Absalom did to Amnon just as Absalom had commanded. Then all the king's sons arose, and each mounted his mule and fled. Well, the servants of Absalom must have been killers, just like Absalom was. There's no excuse for that. Just because they were following orders, there's no excuse for cold-blooded murder, especially the crown prince. Notice that Amnon told his servants, wait till Amnon's heart is merry with wine, till he's drunk. He's drunk, it'll be easier to kill him. John Gill speculates that Absalom probably knew Amnon's tendency to abuse alcohol. That's a speculation, of course. We don't know that. Everybody drank wine at these festivals. And think about this. This is Eastern Oriental hospitality. That's where you don't kill people. That's terrible to do that. But Absalom did it. Now Absalom tells his servants, don't fear. Have I not myself commanded you? Be courageous, be valiant. Of course, it takes courage to murder the crown prince in cold blood. But Absalom is trying to tell them, you don't need to worry. I myself, in other words, the heir to the throne, I have commanded you. So you don't need to worry because I'll take care of you when I take over the kingdom. Well, let's look at the line of succession from David. David's oldest son was Amnon, who Absalom is getting ready to kill, so he would be out of the way. Now, David's second son was Kileab, the son of Abigail. He probably had died as a child, according to ClaudeMaryOttini.com, he's an Old Testament scholar, who says that Kileab probably died as a child since his name does not appear in latter text. So that's a reasonable supposition, but it is a supposition. And then Absalom was David's third son. So once Amnon is out of the way and Kileab is probably already dead, that means Absalom is in line for the throne. And so what he's saying here, I'm going to protect you if you kill Amnon because I'll be on the throne. And those servants might have thought, hey, we'll be big shots. Instead of being servants of a prince, we'll be servants of a king. So Amnon probably had the crown in mind as well as revenge against Amnon for killing his sister, Absalom's sister Tamar. Absalom might have been mixing business with pleasure. He might have been mixing personal revenge with statecraft. After the murder of the king's sons in verse 29, got on their mules and got out of Dodge. Why? Because they thought they were about to be murdered too. It's a reasonable supposition. In royal families, people start killing siblings. That's, things can get out of hand. Now, of course, they got on a mule because Israel didn't have horses. Now, Jameson, Foster, and Brown makes a great rustic statement here. Quote, the Syrian mules are, in activity, strength, and capabilities, still far superior to ours. Now, I don't know how Jameson, Foster, and Brown knows that, but we'll take his word for it. They got on their mules and they left. 2 Samuel 13, verses 30 through 33. Now it was while they were on the way that the report came to David, saying, Absalom has struck down all the king's sons, and not one of them is left. Then the king arose, tore his clothes, and lay on the ground, and all his servants were standing by with clothes torn. Jonadab, the son of Shimeah, David's brother, responded, Do not let my lord suppose they have put to death all the young men, the king's sons. For Amnon alone is dead, because by the intent of Absalom this has been determined since the day that he violated his sister Tamar. Now therefore do not let my lord the king take the report to heart, namely all the king's sons are dead, for only Amnon is dead. So verse 30 says, while they were on the way, that's the king's sons, fleeing on their mules, heading back to Jerusalem, somebody told David, John Gill suspects it was somebody at the banquet had run ahead and told David, all your sons are dead, which of course is not true, but panic does that sort of stuff. That messenger just left early enough to get to Jerusalem before anybody else did, but he also left so soon that he didn't apprise himself correctly of the facts on the ground. He didn't realize that all the other sons had escaped. The messenger just thought all the sons were killed. He didn't hang around to find out. Now you could imagine the shock that David must have felt when he heard that all of his sons were dead. And so David tore his clothes, typical sign of mourning, lay on the ground. I'm sure he was sobbing and crying. All his servants were doing the same thing. His courtiers, his ministers of state, and his principal officers, as John Gill puts it, they all show their solidarity with David. And then Jonadab shows up. Now, who is this Jonadab, son of Shimeah? Well, Shimeah was David's brother. He was one of the sons of Jesse at Bethlehem that Samuel overlooked when he was looking for the next king of Israel to supplant Saul. And Shimeah had a son called Jonadab. And so Jonadab was David's nephew. Now this was the same Jonadab that counseled Amnon on how to seduce and succor Tamar to get Tamar alone in his bedchamber so that he could rape her. That was the last chapter. I won't go into the details there, but Jonadab was the mastermind behind that rape. So he's not a good guy. We read about him in the first part of this chapter, verse 3. But Amnon had a friend whose name was Jonadab, the son of Shimeah, David's brother, and Jonadab was a very shrewd man. This is what Benson says about Jonadab telling David, No, David, not all your sons are dead. Quote, but what unparalleled impudence and effrontery, says Delaney. Benson is quoting an earlier commentator named Delaney. But what unparalleled impudence and effrontery, says Delaney, was this, to speak with such calmness and unconcern of a horrid villainy, which he himself had contrived, and of which he now saw the dreadful consequences. What a miscreant minister was this, and how much fitter to be admitted into the councils of hell than into those of David. Wow, couldn't be said any better. He was an SOB, to put it in a short sentence, to just nonchalantly talk about that murder of Tamar as if he had nothing to do with that murder of Tamar. Excuse me, that rape of Tamar. To talk about that rape of Tamar just like he had nothing to do with that rape of Tamar. Now, some, in fact, several commentators, probably a lot of them, say that it's worse than this, that Absalom has told what happened here so precisely to David and so quickly that it sounds like he knew about Absalom's plan to murder Amnon, and in fact, he helped plan that murder of Amnon. Now, why would he do that? Well, Amnon, as long as he's alive, has knowledge that Jonadab helped him with that plot. If Amnon ever got in trouble and decided to spill the beans about what happened, well, guess who's going to get in trouble? Jonadab. And so that's one possible reason why Jonadab decided to silence Amnon by conspiring with Absalom to bump Amnon off. Another reason might be that Jonadab thought his chances would be better in an Absalom regime, better than in an Amnon regime, for whatever reason. Maybe he just figured Absalom would be a better king than Amnon ever would be. Wouldn't surprise me. Amnon was a murderer. Of course, Absalom was a murderer, too. But for political reasons, he might have decided his chances would be better with Absalom than Amnon. Whatever his motives were, and this is speculation, that he was in on the plot with Absalom to murder Amnon. We don't know that. The text doesn't say it, but a lot of commentators think that he sure knows an awful lot about what's going on here. How does he know that the intent of Absalom from the day 2 years earlier that Amnon raped Tamar, how does he know? How does Jonadab know that Absalom's intent has been to get revenge? How does he know unless he was part of the planning of the revenge? That's the theory. So in verse 33, Jonadab says to David, "Therefore do not let my lord the king take the report to heart, namely, all the king's sons are dead, for only Amnon is dead." Well, now the next question that arises in my mind is, why did Jonadab even bother to set the king straight on how many sons were dead? Well, this is my speculation. It could be that Jonadab wanted to lessen the possibility that David would, in his rage, send soldiers to kill Absalom. And of course, if we assume that Jonadab is conspiring with Absalom, he doesn't want his co-conspirator to go down. Now, there is a translation issue in verse 32, where Jonadab tells David, by the intent of Absalom, this has been determined since the day that he violated his sister Tamar. First question is, that is the NASB translation. First question is how could Absalom's intent be known? It doesn't say the intent was discovered 2 years ago when the rape occurred. It means the intent of Absalom has been discovered at some time since the rape occurred 2 years ago, and we assume that maybe the intent has been very recently, that people have discovered that Absalom had decided to murder Amnon. Well, how did that intent be discovered? The Cambridge commentator speculates it could have been Absalom's sinister looks, or maybe Absalom's words. Cambridge commentary says that it's not likely Absalom's words that let people determine that Absalom was planning to murder Amnon, because Absalom had been dissembling for 2 years, been acting perfectly unaggrieved, no plan of a plot, no word of a plot out of his mouth. And so Cambridge speculates it's Absalom's sinister looks. Well, I find that kind of hard to believe, too. If he was dissembling with his words, I'm sure he would be dissembling with his looks, too. I don't know. Maybe a scuttlebutt. If somehow he claims that he knows what Absalom has been planning to do, and of course that's what gives rise to the suspicion that the way he knows is because he helped plan the murder. Well, I'm sure David is so upset now. He's not thinking about how Jonadab figured out Absalom's intent. Maybe he thought it was just court gossip that he knew. There's another translation here besides intent in verse 32, because by the intent of Absalom, this has been determined, says Jonadab. The Holman Christian Study Bible says this, in fact, Absalom had planned this ever since the day Amnon disgraced his sister Tamar. That translation doesn't even get into how somebody found out what Absalom had done. The author of the book of 2 Samuel had to know somehow. I just think it's court gossip myself. I think he figured that, well, sooner or later he's going to come get Amnon. I mean, that's a serious thing, killing your sister. And so it would be reasonable to suppose that Absalom's been plotting this murder for 2 years. Well, if it's true that Jonadab had planned the murder with Absalom, then that means Jonadab would have counseled Amnon to rape and Absalom to murder. Ooh, what a great counsel that guy is. And Benson, the commentator, says that Jonadab should have told David earlier of Absalom's intent, if he apparently knew it, so David could have warned Amnon, but Jonadab didn't say a word. Here's another quote from Colin Delitzsch as representative of those commentators that say that Jonadab planned this murder. Quote, "Jonadab does not seem to speak from mere conjecture. He is much too sure of what he says. He might possibly have heard expressions from Absalom's lips which made him certain as to how the matter stood." That's Colin Delitzsch. So in other words, the way that the plan to murder Amnon had gotten revealed because Absalom let things slip, that's Colin Delitzsch's conjecture as to how Jonadab found out about the plan. Yeah, well, that's one way, hearing expressions from Absalom's lips. But another way would be that he actually planned the murder himself. We go now to 2 Samuel chapter 13, verses 34 through 36. Meanwhile, Absalom had fled. When the young man who was standing watch looked up, this is standing watch at Jerusalem, there were many people coming from the road west of him from the side of the mountain. Jonadab said to the king, "Look, the king's sons have come. It's exactly like your servant said." Your servant being Jonadab. "It's exactly like your servant Jonadab said." Just as he, Jonadab, finished speaking, the king's sons entered and wept loudly. Then the king and all his servants also wept bitterly. So Absalom flees. Now, we're going to find out later, he fled north to Geshur. But it's ironic here. Absalom had promised his henchmen, his servants, protection if they carried out the murder. Back in verse 28, which we just passed, Absalom had said this, "When I order you to strike Amnon, then kill him. Don't be afraid. Am I not the one who has commanded you? Be strong and courageous." In other words, the implications there are very strong. "I'm going to take care of you guys if you murder Amnon." But instead of protecting his servants, Absalom flees in fear. And the reason he was fleeing, because he knew what a serious thing he had done. It was a capital crime. It was murder. There was no city of refuge for a premeditated murder like this, only for involuntary manslaughter, as John Gill and Jameson Fawcett Brown point out. So, hey, he's subject to getting himself executed. And it was only logical that David would punish such a crime. I mean, after all, it was the murder of the heir to the throne. So, yeah, Absalom had a good reason to flee. He fled north. Meanwhile, south in Jerusalem, there's a watchtower over one of the gates where this young man was standing watch. That's according to the Cambridge commentary. He sees people coming down from the west of him, from the west of the young watchman, the road coming down. And then Jonadab says, "See there, all the sons, king's sons have come. Not none of them have coming, but all of them are coming. It's exactly like your servant said." In other words, didn't I tell you that Absalom didn't kill all the sons? He only killed one, so it's just like I said. There they're all coming. So he seems to be applauding himself for his foresight, Jonadab does seem to be doing. What a schemer. Great family David's got. We go now to 2 Samuel 13, verses 37 through 39, and we will finish this audio. "Now Absalom fled and went to Talmai, son of Ammihud, king of Geshur. And David mourned for his son every day. Absalom had fled and gone to Geshur, where he stayed 3 years. Then King David longed to go to Absalom, for David had finished grieving over Amnon's death." Now, who is this Talmai? Well, first of all, where is Geshur? Geshur is right east of the Sea of Galilee, across the hills there, at the Golan Heights. I know what Geshur looks like today because when I was in China, there was a fellow professor there who had gotten married right east of the Sea of Galilee over in Jordan and took a bunch of wedding pictures. And I looked at that and I said, well, that's interesting. I didn't know what it looked like over there. It looks kind of like scrubby hills and desert, kind of. Rocks, wilderness, but that's, and they were standing there in their wedding pictures. They actually got married there, right where Absalom fled to. And the king of Geshur was Talmai, and Talmai had a daughter. Her name was Maacah, and Maacah had married David. And when, after Maacah had married David, Maacah gave birth to Absalom. So, Talmai's the granddaddy, Maacah is the daughter, and Absalom is the grandson of Talmai. And so basically Absalom is fleeing back home for protection from his family. Stayed there 3 years. This Talmai, king of Geshur, has already been mentioned in 2 Samuel chapter 3, verse 3, when a list of David's sons were being given, his second, Chileab by Abigail, the widow of Nabal, and the third, that's Absalom, the son of Maacah, the daughter of Talmai, king of Geshur. So Absalom stays in Geshur for 3 years until Joab comes and gets him. We'll read that in the next chapter, 2 Samuel 14, verse 23. So Joab arose and went to Geshur and brought Absalom to Jerusalem. So we'll pick that thread of the story up in our next audio. Now David mourned for his son every day. Question is what son? Is he mourning for Amnon who had been killed, or is he mourning for Absalom who was in exile? In other words, is he mourning for a rapist or a murderer? Is he mourning for Amnon the rapist or Absalom the murderer? Now, this reminds us, of course, of that famous prophecy in 2 Samuel chapter 7 where Nathan said, "The sword is never going to leave your house, David," and here we have it. Well, if he was mourning for Amnon the rapist, he was mourning for Amnon like he didn't mourn for Bathsheba's dead son, the product of their adultery. Now, there's some reasons for this, perhaps. First of all, the differences between that dead baby and Amnon. Amnon was a grown man. He was heir to the throne. He didn't die naturally. He was killed by his own brother. So there were some distinctions as to why David might be mourning Amnon. Another distinction is Amnon didn't die because of David's gross sin, like the one with Bathsheba. David was not directly responsible for the death of Amnon. However, he was indirectly responsible because he didn't prosecute Amnon, and therefore Absalom took private revenge. I wonder whether David at this point would even recognize that he was negligent and possibly, I don't want to say immoral, but he was negligent in not prosecuting Amnon. But at any rate, he's mourning for a rapist. We need to remember that. A rapist. Now, it's true, it's his son, but he was a rapist. An incestuous rapist. Now, verse 39 says, King David longed to go to Absalom. Why didn't David just go ahead and go since he wanted to see Absalom so bad? Well, the NIV Study Bible suggests some reasons. First of all, public justice required punishment for Absalom. If David went to see Absalom, the public would expect him to punish Absalom. And David did not want to do that, apparently. Another reason is that David wanted to keep Absalom out of public view for a while. It didn't look good that the heir to the throne, Absalom, was a murderer and fratricide. And that word fratricide makes me take note of the fact that Absalom had not just killed the king's son, he had killed his own brother. It's a half-brother, but it's still his brother. Now, Adam Clark says that this longing to go see Absalom shows that David was unreasonably attached to Absalom. David would have been better off if Absalom had never come home. It would have saved David a civil war. But oh no, David's got to go see Absalom. It just shows that parents who show too much sympathy for their sinning children can cause all kinds of damage to themselves, to their family, to their friends, and to the kids who they are enabling. You hear all these counselors who are always talking about, don't enable him. Well, that's the easiest thing in the world to do. They're your kids. You want to do everything you can to protect your kids, and what you do is you end up hurting them instead of helping them. Well, that's what David was. He's a classic enabler. Well, we'll just let it go. He'll do better. Now he's got his daughter raped and his son murdered, and one of his sons, surviving son, is a murderer, getting ready to start a civil war. Total disaster. So let's don't think that David got away with anything when he committed adultery with Bathsheba and murdered Bathsheba's husband Uriah the Hittite. Verse 39 says, King David longed to go to Absalom since David had finished grieving over Amnon's death. In other words, Amnon can't be brought back from the dead. There's no use mourning over him. So I'm over it now, and so I want to see Absalom. It doesn't matter that he murdered my son. I just keep thinking, if this had happened to me, if one of my sons had murdered another one of my sons, that would be it. Out of the will, folks. I doubt I'd even talk to him. I don't think I'd go see him in jail. There's no excuse for that. Murder. It's murder. But oh no, David's okay, well, we'll just let bygones be bygones, Absalom. And he goes up. And so David is a pathetic king. He was a fantastic warrior when he was in the wilderness and when he took over Judah and then when he got Judah to beat northern Israelites, King Saul's kingdom. He never lost. He was great. And ever since Bathsheba, it all starts with a woman. Men who let themselves be seduced by women do nothing but bring shame, dishonor, and disaster on their heads. Well, with that little moralistic exhortation, we are now finished with chapter 13, and we are now ready in our next audio to go to chapter 14. And in that chapter, we will see Absalom returning to Jerusalem after Joab goes and gets him. So I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.